Good morning and welcome to Backyard and Beyond. This morning we're visiting with Emily Kringle, registered dietitian with the Cass County Health System. And we want to talk more about dietary guidelines. Good morning to you, Emily.
Good morning, LaVon.
Emily, it's probably been a month or so ago that we visited. It was kind of after we'd been seeing lots in the news, hearing on the news about the new dietary guidelines. So, and I know we visited a bit about how they come about, but just kind of give us a brief review of how do dietary guidelines come to be and the changes come to be?
Well, it starts several years before they're actually released, and there's an advisory committee that meets seven times. It is open to the public. You could watch it via web, or you could attend. I mean, they were in Washington. They look through all of the research. They don't actually do the research. They look at what has been published. And they released their scientific report in 2015.
Like 500 pages of it.
Yes, yes. And any of us could comment on that for several months, 2 months. It was extended for another month. And then that is all kind of hashed over, and the science is made into practical suggestions for us to follow.
Yeah, because first of all, we don't want to read 500 pages. We're not going to read 500 pages.
No.
And if we did, we probably couldn't come to a conclusion.
Exactly.
But I think the important point here is that, first of all, the committee is made up of a variety of people, but they're not the ones who say, okay, this is the way it should be, because it's all based on all this research from all over.
Exactly. So. And then it's kind of all digested and come down in some basic recommendations.
Mm-hmm. And quickly, the purpose of dietary guidelines is?
Well, it's really for regulatory agencies to have guidelines to follow. Perhaps schools to base their guidelines on. Perhaps institutions like hospitals, nursing homes. But then it even comes down more for just basic suggestions, simple suggestions for all of us.
Yeah, and the ultimate purpose is for healthier people, correct?
Exactly. So. Exactly. Basically, what it really came down to, it's kind of interesting that we do all of this searching, all of this weeding down, and it just basically comes out to, maybe I'm oversimplifying, but basic, good common sense.
Except I say we don't have common sense
anymore. Yeah, that's right. I knew you were going to say that.
You've heard me say that before. But see, I always go back to your statement, Emily, that the basic line is.
The basic line is, eat in moderation a variety of foods.
Yeah, yeah.
And the guidelines go on to say that no single food can be a superfood or a curse. So that plays into that moderation.
And I see lists of superfoods. Thank goodness I haven't seen any one superfood lately,
no.
But usually there's a list of 10 or more, which often includes quite a few fruits and vegetables.
Oh,
why
yes.
is that?
Exactly. But it's not like any soup. Certain food is going to give you the nutrients and variety that we need. The guidelines, we have a long way to go. 3/4 of Americans do not eat as many fruits and vegetables. Most eat too much salt, saturated fat, and added sugar, which adds up to too many calories. So I would rather say this is what we should eat, not what we shouldn't eat.
Mm-hmm.
So we should eat lots of fruits and vegetables. And they can be any shape or form, canned, frozen, fresh. And I think sometimes we all get keyed in on the fresh, which is awesome, but it can be a variety.
And that's where I think people say it's a lot more expensive to eat healthily. And I think because sometimes fresh food is more expensive, and that's an argument too. But when you go back and say it could be canned, it could be frozen, those expenses and kind of, I think, again, some studies show kind of averages out. It doesn't cost that much more to eat healthily.
No. In fact, I've heard some opposite claims, but some of that gets sort of political, so I don't think we'll discuss that today.
When we're talking about that variety also, and avoiding single foods, because there is no perfect food,
no.
That I think, does it say something about combinations are important?
Yes. People eat foods in combination. Pattern is greater than the sum of its parts. Mm. And, you know, I remember years ago, I learned somewhere along the line that iron is better absorbed if you have it with vitamin C.
Mm-hmm.
So
there's a combination.
And so the logistics of that, meat has iron in it, and we often eat potatoes with meat, which has vitamin C.
Mm.
So that's a very logical thing we do. Breakfast, you might have a vitamin C food like orange, and you might have a cereal that's fortified with iron. So some of those combinations are natural things, but some of them aren't, you know, necessarily. And maybe if some people eat a pattern of always fried foods with a lot of extra added fats, that might be that person's pattern, which maybe isn't so good.
Mm-hmm. An interesting way to think about that. And, you know, we don't have to know about the iron and the vitamin C as long as we're eating that variety.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Makes it a lot easier.
Again, you know, we're supposed to eat whole grains. Half of our grains be whole grain because of the added nutrients and fiber that are in whole grains. It's not added, it's just there. It's probably better to cook and know about your foods and maybe limit the amount of added salt and sodium you add to food. Sugar got kind of...
Ooh, that's a biggie.
It got kind of attacked. And this doesn't mean the sugar that's in fruit or the sugar that's naturally in milk. But a lot of us, without really thinking about it, might eat a lot of added sugar. Of course, in our desserts, pastries, maybe what we're drinking, which we don't really think about, or if we're adding a lot of sugar to things. I had a patient once tell me, well, I've really cut down on my sugar. I now don't add it to my already sweetened cereal.
Well, that's a step in the right direction. But yeah. And I'm just thinking, as you're talking about sugar, well, here it is, almost Valentine's Day. And what's the biggest treat?
Candy.
Well, roses and candy, you know. And the same thing almost every holiday, it's the candy. And if we just stuck to that holiday, it probably would be okay.
Oh,
but we all, well... Most everybody I know likes something sweet.
Yes. And really, that's okay if you can have it be that treat, that... small part of it, not the half a pan of brownies or the take the box of chocolates to the easy chair with you.
Now, Emily, we've talked mostly in generalities, and... I know last time we talked about caffeine and that talks about that in the dietary guidelines. But there's one other food that I wonder about, and I think you said was specifically mentioned, and that's eggs.
Yes. You know, that's been on a really roller coaster through
yes.
the last few years. But science tells us that our bodies make cholesterol by the combination of fats we eat. And it may not be related to the actual dietary cholesterol we eat, which is in animal foods. And egg yolks are one of the biggest sources. So, again, there isn't a restriction on that. I think, again, use moderation. You don't need 6 eggs at a time, but they're a great source of protein. They tend to be inexpensive. And so it's not one of those curse foods. it's definitely can be part of a healthy diet.
Part of the healthy diet. That's kind of the bottom line there, Emily, and we're talking about what's part of a healthy diet. So I know our we can keep discussing these, and you know, hopefully people will ask some questions. But for now, I want to thank you, Emily Kringle, for visiting with us about the dietary guidelines. And until next time, here's a thought. If you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change.